Welcome to Build with Bitcoin with co-host Israel Munoz and Lynn Berstow. In today's episode, we speak with Gustavo from Swapido. Swapido is a Mexico-based fintech that allows users to off-ramp their Bitcoin into the local Mexican peso market. They do this by integrating Bitcoin's Lightning Network with Mexico's instant payment system called SPEI. Swapido is working on many other features. It's a fascinating conversation, and we hope you enjoy. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a Bitcoin-only financial services company, which I have personally been using for years, and I'm a big fan of the product and company.
Yeah, I'm also a big fan too. And I'm a big fan, especially when it comes to referring my friend group to start their Bitcoin journey or acquire some Bitcoin, because in addition to being a Bitcoin-only financial services company, River also has personalized customer service. So a person can actually talk to a human being if they need to when they're getting their account set up or in the process of it. I also love the fact that they have no fees on recurring purchases. And they also recently instituted a proof of reserve. So if you choose to hold your Bitcoin at River instead of self-custody, which many people do choose that, you can verify on their site that they have 100% reserve Bitcoin for every Bitcoin that you hold.
River also just launched a very interesting feature, which is a 3.8% yield paid out in Bitcoin on your US dollar cash that you deposit at River. So you can hold that US dollar cash, earn that 3.8% yield in Bitcoin in your account in River. And important to note, this is all through a regulated banking partner of theirs at a FDIC insured institution. So I think the River is a great partner for Bitcoin and cash deposited.
Yeah, because as much as we'd love to live on a Bitcoin standard, at least you and I, we need cash to operate in the world. And so this allows you to be able to earn a very competitive yield on your excess cash and have it paid in Bitcoin if you choose and just continue to build your Bitcoin stash. So for anyone looking to start their journey, we invite you to join us at River by visiting partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, we have with us Gustavo Flores from Swapido. Welcome, Gustavo.
Hi, Israel. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're excited to get into today's conversation. So Gustavo, Swapido is a Bitcoin-only solution for the Mexican market, bridging Bitcoin with pesos. But before we get into what you're doing at Swapido and some of your goals as we get into a very interesting time in the Bitcoin space here, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your origins from Peru, Canada, to Mexico, on the entrepreneurial side as well. What got you here pre-Swapido and how you kind of got started with your company?
Of course. Well, thank you for the introduction, Israel. So I was born in Peru, in Lima, Peru, and I spent the first few years of my life there. But I moved to Canada when I was 8, and I went to school in Canada. I went to college. Basically, I spent almost all my life in Canada, in Montreal specifically. And I got into Bitcoin around 2015 when I was just like turning 18 years old. I was just trying to make money online, completely careless about the mission or the objectives of Bitcoin. I just wanted to make money, right? So, but it still got me here, right? So I guess I gambled with altcoins for a while. Until it came crashing down, and I had to learn my lesson through error, So I guess I became a real Bitcoiner around 2018. I launched my first startup, Verify, in 2019. Actually, before that, we had a little mining project. We had like a couple ASICs, but not like a real startup, So in 2019, I launched Verify. We don't know yet what we're going to do with Verify at the beginning. We just know it's going to be about Bitcoin, and we want to focus on education, and we want to focus on privacy, self-custody, and, the top values of Bitcoin. So in Montreal, first we started, doing like self-custody support to people. So we help people set up wallets, use CoinJoin, use different Bitcoin tools. But quickly, it just turned into a non-custodial Bitcoin exchange. So Verify, people could buy and sell Bitcoin. And we would also help them in the process with their transactions, with their wallet handling, and with everything involved using Bitcoin. We were very close to the Bull Bitcoin crew because we were organizing events together at Bitcoin Montreal. But because they were also providing us the liquidity we needed for Verify and other types of support. So it was just a natural collaboration that concluded in Bull Bitcoin acquiring Verify. So it was an acquisition, but we also all got hired. So we all got jobs at Bull Bitcoin. And then I worked there for a year. This was all around the time of COVID. Now we're talking 2021. And that's also at that moment that I moved to Mexico because of COVID. And that's like kind of my background story.
I just want to take a step back and just ask about the Canadian Bitcoin environment. I'm very curious about this because can you describe how the adoption or acceptance or who were the Bitcoiners in Canada prior to the COVID and then the trucker, I don't know what you call it, but the incident with the truckers and being able to commit to receive Bitcoin when their accounts were frozen by the Canadian government was a big moment, I think, for Bitcoin adoption in Canada. And as you were so involved with that, I'd love to hear your first person observation about how things changed in terms of who was adopting Bitcoin prior to that and then as that transpired.
Yes, of course. Well, let's say I was in Montreal, you know, so I got the perspective from Montreal. I was organizing meetups for many years, you know, and it was mostly your traditional Bitcoin like audience, you know, people that are young, they work in tech, they work in Bitcoin, they're developers, freedom fighters, you know, people that are already very close to what Bitcoin is, you know. So let's say we would organize meetups and we would have around 100, 200 people. Montreal was probably one of the first meetups in the world and one of the biggest meetups. So we were lucky to have that. When COVID hit, of course, we had to stop everything in person. And let's say now, like 3-4 years after, what I see going, for example, to the Canadian Bitcoin Conference, which I was there in May, now you see a crowd that is much older, you know, much maybe wider on the right wing spectrum of Canada. So not just only libertarians and like tech people, but just anybody that was, let's say, on the conservative or right wing side during the trucker convoy question, you know. So I guess it expanded the reach to a wider audience. And now when you go to meetups and conferences in Canada, you're going to see way more people that got introduced exactly at that moment through the trucker convoy because it just made sense for them from a censorship point, resistance point of view. You know, the Canadian government can freeze our bank accounts while Bitcoin is unfrozable. The Canadian government can deflate our currency like they did during COVID. Bitcoin, nobody can deflate Bitcoin, you know, inflate Bitcoin. So that's pretty much what like changed the perspective of many Canadians.
And out of curiosity for you, Gustavo, I mean, personally, you kind of mentioned earlier that you, as you know, many people, this happens, you kind of come in for the price and, you know, kind of stay for the mission as far as, you know, what Bitcoin is and what gets you kind of hooked regarding this asset and technology. What aspects particularly have drawn your attention to staying focused on Bitcoin only for you? I mean, is it the financial freedom aspect or others? What's your take on that?
Right. Well, I guess at first it was, you know, in 2017, 2018, I had the experience of having like a portfolio of like 100 altcoins, you know, that I would track every day. And it goes up and as quickly it goes down, you know. So this just demonstrates how little value there really is to how fast things can evaporate. And you know that it's just built on like a Ponzi scheme, you know, it's just built on the fact that someone else is going to buy it off you. And there's no underlying value of it, right? So I guess to me, what really got me hooked is the fact that Bitcoin has a strong censorship resistant underlying value behind it. You know, it cannot be confiscated. It cannot be censored. Nobody can inflate it beyond what the rules specify. You know, so because Bitcoin has a decentralized peer-to-peer network of nodes, it allows it to have censorship resistance. And I would say that the scarcity, the 21 million, comes after that. In my opinion, censorship resistance comes first and 21 million comes later. Because if you only had 21 million and no censorship resistance, well, someone could change the rules. You know, someone could interfere in the process and that wouldn't even be valid. So I guess to me, it was really the core value of a decentralized peer-to-peer network of nodes and the censorship resistance that comes with it.
Let's switch gears and dive into Swapito a little bit more, which you just launched in a month ago. So we're excited because you're our first founder that we've interviewed that has such a fresh start to it, even though you're a very experienced entrepreneur and you've had other companies before. But since you've just launched, can you tell us a little bit about the launch process and explain Swapito to our audience?
Yes, of course. So to be exact, I launched Swapito on October 10th, which is a bit under a month ago. And this is a project I've been working on since May, June. So I had the luck of finding an API by the Bitcoin company. So I've been using their API to be able to connect to the BitMexican bank account system. So during these past months, you know, we built, our focus was really to improve the user experience around off-ramping, around selling your Bitcoin in Mexico. And I think we did a pretty good job at that. So, we launched 3 weeks ago. So far, you know, we've gotten a few users. People are liking the solution. Some people are even saying it's the best off-ramp there is in Mexico. So we're pretty happy about that, you know, and we expect that it's going to continue to keep growing. We're going to continue to keep adding features. But yeah, so far, the experience has been pretty good. There's been some challenges regulatory-wise, and I'm sure we're going to get into those details later. But yeah, it's been a pretty good experience so far.
And Gustavo, when you were looking at creating a solution, were you envisioning that the users would be moving out of their Bitcoin position for transactional purposes or just to take profits or for cash? But are you looking at making it more of a currency replacement?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. So I guess the product is really based on my use case, which it might be niche, but I think it's shared by other people and needed by other people too. So just to continue my story, when I got to Mexico, when I left Canada during COVID, I wasn't an official resident at first. I was under like a tourist visa, and I was already being paid in Bitcoin by my employer at that time, Bull Bitcoin, and then Wasabi. So I had to just use Bitcoin to pay for anything in Mexico, right? So, but at first I couldn't do it because I was just a tourist and all Mexican platforms asked for Mexican ID. So I guess that the fact that I was paid in Bitcoin and the fact that I was, let's say, always, I wanted speed in the process. You know, once I got my Mexican ID, well, I signed up to different platforms, but they all had many steps. You know, you usually have to deposit, then trade, then withdraw. So I created Swapito to solve basically these three issues, you know. So first, in Swapito, we accept people that don't have Mexican ID. So if you're just on a tourist visa, but you're in Mexico and you want to pay for things, you can use Swapito with your ID from another country. Second, well, it's very fast to use Swapito. You know, it just takes a couple seconds to move money from your wallet into anybody's bank account. So that's pretty fast. And also it's non-custodial. So it there's no risk you leaving your coins within our platform. So I guess the product was built for me, for people that are paid in Bitcoin. But it's also useful for people that have made money in Bitcoin or in other cryptocurrencies and they want to cash out. I expect this to be, you know, people always focus on the buy side and we're going to have the buy side eventually. But I think the sell side is very important if we believe in a future where people earn in Bitcoin, where people have tremendous wealth in Bitcoin and want to diversify into other assets or just pay for their living expenses. So that's the niche I'm trying to go after at first, and we'll expand from there.
And you're using Lightning as an underlying tool for that?
Yes, exactly. We're using Lightning. And for those that don't know, in Mexico, we have this electronic payment system called SPEI, which is an instant payment system in the banking system. So if you combine Lightning with SPEI and with a non-custodial experience, you can basically move money from the user's wallet into Swapito, into a bank account in just a couple of seconds, you know, because Lightning is instant and SPEI is instant, and they're both like almost no fees. So combined together, it's a pretty powerful force.
Yeah, I've been, I think, you know, being a U.S. citizen and having worked in that and lived in that financial environment all my life, and then moving to Mexico, the SPEI facility is pretty remarkable. And I've often struggled with the question of why, you know, for adoption purposes in Mexico, if the SPEI system works, I mean, I can send money to any other Mexican bank account 24 hours a day, 7 days a week through that system. So it kind of removes a little of the advantages of Lightning in the U.S. market, where the banking system is really constrained to office hours. So, you know, it's an interesting combination to use the two of those together. But you're also targeting people who might not themselves have a Mexican bank account, but which is a growing amount of the population with the number of expats that are moving to Mexico. But also they can use your system to transact and then move it into the traditional Mexican for the recipient side.
That's exactly right. So as you live here, Lynn, you know, as I know that many places accept what we call transferencia in Spanish, or just bank transfer. So you can go to a restaurant and you can pay with a bank transfer. So you can use Swapito to pay at a restaurant, to pay your rent. Really, almost anybody in the country except that has a bank account. So maybe not in rural Mexico, but in, let's say, big cities, almost anybody accepts bank transfers for payment for whatever, right? So even if you don't have a bank account, you can use Swapito as a tourist or as an expat or as a Mexican national to pay for really anything in Mexico using Lightning within seconds.
Are you set up yet, or maybe this is on your game plan to go from Swapito to Swapito? So if, let's say, I wanted to pay you and I have Swapito, but you do not, can you download it quickly and I can transfer to you? Is that possible?
Well, if you use first of all, Swapito is a web application. So just to specify that. But yeah, with time, we will add the features so like users can send to each other. So far, we don't have that many users, so it's not that useful, you know. But yeah, with time, we want to add that as long as with many other things.
And so to just maybe land a few of the points that you're mentioning, as far as the experience, Gustavo, so basically as an off-ramp into Mexican pesos, I, as a user, I already hold Bitcoin as a Swapito user, right? So I already have some Bitcoin that I want to off-ramp into pesos to pay for whatever it may be, or to whomever it may be. And all I need then is to be able to send Bitcoin via Lightning to the recipient with their clave and name. Can you take us through like that actual, you know, kind of 1, 2, 3 step experience for the user?
Definitely. Okay. So, well, you go on swapito.com, you click on create an account. You can sign in with Google or with your email. Once you go on the app, you have to do the KYC. It's a very straightforward KYC, very standard. We ask for your ID, for your proof of address, and some other details about yourself. It takes about 5 minutes for you to get verified within business hours. You get an email saying you've been verified. You can now use Swapito. You go on the Swapito interface, and it's a very simple interface. Well, you just, the first question is how many pesos you want. Okay, so you enter, for example, 100 pesos. Once you get asked what to which recipient. If you already have a saved recipient, well, you can just click on it. But if you add a new recipient, you have to add the full legal name and the clave. The clave is just the bank number of the recipient. And it can be anybody, you know. It doesn't have to be you. Like we said, it can be really anybody in Mexico that has a bank account. And once you can also add like a tag if you want to say like Well, this is like my favorite restaurant, you know, anything that just to remind you what it is. Or your My Mercado Pago bank account, you know, if you have many bank accounts. Then you can enter a memo, which is a message that will be received with the transaction that will appear on the recipient's bank transfer when they receive the money. So you enter these three fields, like I said, amount, recipient, and memo, and then you click on create order, and you're going to have a Bolt 11 Lightning invoice, which is just a standard Lightning Network invoice that all wallets support. You switch apps, you go on your Lightning wallet, you paste the invoice, the amount, and everything is going to appear automatically. So you just click on pay. It takes like few seconds, maybe 3 seconds, for the app to say, we've detected your payment and we're sending the money. And it usually takes another 3-5 seconds for you to get notification from the bank that the money has been received. So in total, the process takes about 30 seconds and you go, the money moves from your Lightning wallet into anybody's bank account. But I want to specify something here. If you segment the process, you can see that there can be three people involved. One has the Swapito account, one is the recipient, and another one can pay the Lightning invoice. So technically, I could go on the street in Mexico and I could ask a random person, hey, what's your clave? I'm going to send you 50 pesos. And I could post the invoice on Noster, and some random person across the planet could pay the Lightning invoice, and the person I just met in Mexico can receive money in his bank account. You know, so this can create different models, because this can be used for merchants as well. You know, if you're a merchant, you can now accept Bitcoin with Swapito, but you don't have to deal with Bitcoin later because it's just money in your bank account. You know, so just to say that. That there's different models that can be explored using Swapito.
I just want to interject that I saw Gustavo present this at an event for Mexico Tech Week a couple weeks ago, and the audience there were primarily people involved in fintech generally. So it was tech, fintech, not so much Bitcoiners. I think, you know, when you gave the demonstration, you had people scan the QR code and receive Satoshis and stuff. And it was just mind-blowing for them to see how quickly they could set up an account, transfer, receive, and just the speed in which all that happened. I think they were not accustomed to the underlying technology of Bitcoin and Lightning and how that can really advance payment systems.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of people that are not yet familiar with Lightning. They think Bitcoin is just slow and expensive to move. But the reality is now that Lightning is out there and you can use it. And also the level of fintech development in Mexico in 2024 is very advanced too. You know, you have many companies providing API integrations for what to use the banking system. So I think people are just not are amazed, because they see that this, both on the Mexico side and on the Bitcoin side, things are moving fast to improve the user experience.
Gustavo, just a step back, can you just explain Lightning for some of our audience may be less familiar with the Bitcoin layers and what Lightning is or what it facilitates?
Yeah, definitely. Well, Lightning is a technology like to make instant Bitcoin transactions of whichever size. They can be microtransactions, as they can be bigger, and they have very low fees. So how is this achieved? Well, to achieve this, you have to have, let's say, two users, let's say me and Israel. We make a Bitcoin transaction on the Bitcoin network together, where we each, or just myself, fund some Bitcoin. So we lock up Bitcoin. Let's say we lock up one Bitcoin, exactly. Now, me and Israel, we can send back and forth to each one of, either him or me, we can send each other back whatever amount within that Bitcoin. We cannot send more than one Bitcoin, but we can send 0.001. And we can do that in an off-chain transaction. So we're not using the blockchain, but we're sending each other signed transactions that could at any time be published on the blockchain. So Israel could say, hey, Gustavo, I'm done transacting with you. I'm going back on the Bitcoin main layer, and I'm publishing this last transaction we just exchanged between ourselves in an off-chain manner. So this means that there's security to the process where nobody can steal each other's funds because we can always bring back the transaction on-chain. And one next level is, what if I have what we call a payment channel? What I just explained is a payment channel. I have one with Israel, and Israel has one with Lynn. Well, Lightning has this cryptographic technology that allows me to move money with to Lynn by passing through Israel. So it's basically one payment channel connected to another. And now the Lightning Network are tens of thousands of payment channels, all connected with each other. So you can basically route your payments to whoever in the network instantly, you know, by going from channel to channel. And I guess that's like the most simple explanation I can give. And for others, let's say, that are outside of the Bitcoin field, well, another way to see this is as, let's say, when you're transacting pesos, you can use Pay, you can transact with physical pesos, you can do a wire transfer. You can also use the MasterCard network to transact pesos. So Lightning is just another network to transact Bitcoin, the currency, as MasterCard is another network to transact pesos, the currency.
And I guess the main takeaway there for what Lightning offers would be the instant and cheap settlement, right? Feature and you know, connecting an instant payment network, in this case Lightning, which is global by nature as well, just because Bitcoin is a borderless money, to a local real-time settlement network. I mean, yeah, it is pretty profound what we're talking about here. And I think you know, you're right, Gustavo, in what you mentioned earlier, that a lot of the use cases are probably still yet to be discovered as you know, some of the consumer behavior and technology changes in the coming years. But you know, can you speak to a little bit of, I mean, how are you actually integrating with Mexico's space system in the background? I mean, without getting too technical, you know, but, you know, how is it that you're able to actually connect Bitcoin's Lightning Network to a domestic payment system like Spay?
Right. So like I said in the beginning, we use the Bitcoin company, which is one of our partners, to integrate with the banking system. So they provide us an API endpoint where we send Bitcoin and we receive pesos. We at Swapito, we specialize in the user experience because what Bitcoin company just provides an API and the compliance, you know, the KYC and all the process behind it. So that's what we're doing so far. I'm right now in the process of getting many more providers, other exchange platforms, other fintech platforms, so that I can integrate with more redundancy, lower fees, you know, in different ways with the banking system in Mexico. I have to do it through exchanges and fintech providers. It's harder for me to do it through banks directly because I don't have all the licensing yet. But yeah, that's basically the process we're involved in. Right now we have the Bitcoin company and we're getting more providers very soon.
And are there any transaction limits to the service that Swapito currently provides, Gustavo?
Yes. Well, right now we have a $3,000 limit per transaction, which is about 60,000 pesos. This is a limit related to Lightning specifically. So when we have on-chain in the next couple of weeks, we're going to increase those limits. And on a monthly basis, like when you sign up with Swapito, we ask for the KYC for you to be able to handle $100,000 a month. If you ever want to do that, more than that, we can ask for more IDs and more information about you to increase your limits. But in general, so far, this has been a good limit for most users. And I would say I have to specify this as well for recipients. There's a $10,000 monthly limit. So if, let's say, I'm paying you, Israel, but I'm a user of Swapito and I have KYC, but you have not, if I want to send to you more than $10,000 a month, then you would have to KYC with Swapito too to increase that limit to $100,000 a month at first, and then other limits.
You mentioned that in a few weeks you'll have on-chain. I know that, you know, just being so fresh launching, and it's great to launch and see where the product market fit is. But can you talk to us a little bit about your kind of development timeline and what you have planned for the future for Swapito?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I'm very much of the philosophy that, you know, you have to launch as fast as possible, you know, because you're never going to have anything perfect. And you can always have a great idea in your mind, but then the market will tell you exactly what they want. So, you know, this is our first feature, but I expect over the next 6 months, we're going to have on-chain buy side, so on-ramp with Lightning on-chain. We're also big believers in stablecoins, so we're going to add USDT and USDC over the main networks that it's being used on. And we're also going to add an affiliate and referral program, you know, to incentivize people to recommend users to us and for users to recommend each other. That was like the most successful marketing strategy that I use at Verify. It was an affiliate network, a very competitive affiliate network where people can, you know, recommend Swapito and gain, you know, we share our revenue with them, you know, so they can make money as they recommend the product. So that's, let's say, the timeline for Swapito over the next 6 months is to become a full-on on and off ramp in Mexico, Bitcoin only, well, Bitcoin plus stable coins, which I think it fits within the Bitcoin only narrative. That's the plan.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because I was listening to a podcast this weekend, 1031, which is one of the VCs that focuses on Bitcoin that we've talked to before. They launched a new podcast, and randomly, it's like one of the conversations that came up with stablecoins, and the viewpoint was really that stablecoins are kind of like an altcoin and really have no business in a Bitcoin-only ethos. And I question that. I feel that, you know, living in and conducting business in parts of the world other than the U.S. or Western Europe, that there is a real need for stablecoins. And I don't even look at them as an altcoin. I don't think that they're a speculative asset. I think they're a transactional facilitator. But I'd love to hear, because I know you're Bitcoin only, and that's one of the attributes of Swapito, is that it's a Bitcoin only company. But how do you think about stablecoins in the realm of Bitcoin, Gustavo?
Right, definitely. Well, I would tell you that a few years ago, I would have given the same response than others do, that stablecoins, you know, they're just like altcoins. They're not useful. They're a distraction. And maybe at some point, to a certain degree, they're a bit of a distraction compared to Bitcoin. You know, I think Bitcoin's innovation is way bigger than stablecoins. But I think now in 2024, it's if you look at the facts, you know, if you look at reality, you can see that there's product market fits to stablecoins, and it's not just related to speculation. You know, because yes, stablecoins are used within trading of altcoins. And with things like DeFi structures, but they have other use cases too, you know. And I think that it's part of the future. I think it will coexist with Bitcoin, and I think that's the vision we want to share. It's based on reality. It's not just based on ideals, you know. So, and like you said, stablecoins are not a speculative asset, and most people that I would say have, it's important to look at it from a perspective of someone that lives outside of the US, outside of Canada, you know, to see the value of stablecoins. If you live in the US, there's not much value to you. But once you understand the global aspect of these markets, that's where you see the value. So we believe in Mexico, there's strong demand for that, particularly right now. With the peso being devalued over the last couple 6 months, we've been hearing a lot of demand from users for that. So we're going to provide to users what they ask for.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, you know, I guess meeting the user, the reality of things is of the market, right? I mean, when you think about it, really, I mean, like the US dollar stablecoin specifically, you could argue it's the second best store value after Bitcoin, right? And I think that's a pretty pretty fair statement, actually. So sounds like quite a bit of features are coming online in the coming months. Any particular one that's, I mean, any priorities there, Gustavo, because you mentioned quite a list there.
Right. Well, I guess the first step for us is to really solidify our position as like the best off-ramp in Mexico for Bitcoin. We have Lightning, but, you know, on-chain has way more use than Lightning. So I get, for me, really, it's about on-chain in the next couple of weeks so that you can off-ramp your Bitcoin either through Lightning or on-chain. So that's the first priority. But then, you know, people want to buy Bitcoin. As much as I personally get earning Bitcoin, I understand the reality is not the same for others. And most people are still in the process of stacking Bitcoin, stacking sats. So yeah, so then the next step would be to add buy Bitcoin and stable coins later, and probably an affiliate program, probably before stable coins, because this is something that is already being asked by many people. You know, we are, the fact that we have a very strong user experience is also attractive to platforms that would like an API to integrate with them, or a revenue share if they refer users to us. So that's something that we want to look into as well.
Well, let's switch and talk a little bit about regulation. It's not an easy topic in any government situation, but it does definitely vary by jurisdiction to jurisdiction. If you've had experience in Canada, I know right now Swapito is not available for U.S. users because of regulatory constraints. But can you talk a little bit about your experience and your perspective of regulation?
Right. Well, I guess my background was in Canada, was pretty good, you know. So Canada, contrary to popular belief, it's a pretty good place to do Bitcoin businesses. And this was, when I was operating, this was even more the case, you know. So back at that point, you needed to have like a money service business license, which is not a complex process, and that was pretty much it. Now there's a difference if you're custodial or if you use altcoins, stablecoins included, you need, there's more compliance and more licensing required in Canada. In Mexico, it's way harder than, well, in Mexico, it's a bit different. Either, if you want to be a full-on exchange, if you want to have bank accounts and direct integrations to the banking system without partners, without third parties, well, you need to get like a fintech license, which is a very long and complex process. It can cost between $200,000 to more, you know. But what's interesting about Mexico is that if you're a foreign company, as we are, we're based in Panama, and you can offer crypto or Bitcoin services to Mexicans without many laws except, you know, KYC and basic, which is just a standard anywhere, really. So this is our position, where we can, you know, gain through partners, through providers, we can access the banking system while maintaining a foreign entity, and we can provide services to Mexican consumers and Mexican businesses. So I guess Mexico is a very complex regulatory framework. But if you know how to play it, there's a few advantages, there's a few loopholes. I do wish that Mexico becomes more Bitcoin friendly. I think that has not been the case yet so far. And there's also a challenge in between the different requirements by different Mexican entities. So usually in Canada or most countries, you have to operate under the financial authorities. In Mexico, you have to also consider the fiscal authorities, who have specific crypto requirements to fiscal legislation. So, and that's, and why is that the case? Because the central bank, who's also part of this process, banned Mexican companies from doing Bitcoin crypto business with consumers in 2019. So technically, every exchange in Mexico is a foreign company that uses a national company to interface with consumers, with the banking system. And when the central bank banned companies from doing Bitcoin crypto business, well, the fiscal authorities were like, okay, we don't want to be left out. You know, we still want to have oversight over this, even on foreign companies. So we're going to change the law to make sure that happens, you know? So I guess that's a big challenge here. It's quite complex. There's many things to take in account. There's many different authorities to consider. So it's a challenge, but it's still manageable.
Yeah, getting past the red tape is, you know, it's a challenge in any jurisdiction, some more than others. And Latin America is, you know, quite a mixed bag there of regulation and red tape. But, you know, that being said, it sounds like you have kind of managed to set yourselves up to be a nimble company as far as how you're set up and how you're actually integrating into the local domestic system. I mean, let's just say that you're successful in launching and, you know, growing your business in Mexico. Gustavo, is there any logical next geography within Latin America, out of curiosity, that you think would be strategic for you guys?
Right. Well, I guess I really want to focus on Mexico over the next year, you know, so this is not something that would happen too soon. However, I do have like personally, I have a soft spot for Peru. Consider I come there. I understand that country really well. And Peru's regulatory framework is quite easy as well. It's very pro-market. So maybe that would be it. But I also want to consider really the vision of Swapito being of the expat movement to Latin America, you know, like it was my personal experience. And I think this is just a growing trend over the next couple of decades and extremely linked to Bitcoin. So what are the next expat destinations where we're talking Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, Panama, you know, and also bigger countries in South America with Brazil, Argentina, Colombia. If I had a magic wand, I wish I could be connected to any banking system in Latin America, you know, and Swapito could connect every country as well. But that is going to take a long time. And for now, we're focused on Mexico, and we're going to see it for the next expat destinations after.
And that kind of brings me to my question about market potential, because for those who are less familiar, I mean, Mexico City itself is a larger market than New York and LA combined. I think I read that just recently, the statistic on that. And this is why it's really become a fintech hub of innovation. And I think similar to like mobile, I mean, Mexico and LATAM just leapfrogged over landlines and just went directly to mobile communications. And so there are technology advantages to being a little bit behind in something for a while, and then you just like leap ahead. But can you just talk to us why you decided to start here in Mexico? I mean, you could have gone back to Canada and done it, or to Peru or wherever else. But why was this an appealing? Why was Mexico an appealing first market for you to open?
Right. Well, I guess Mexico, first of all, is the second biggest, the third biggest country by population in the American continent, you know, after the United States and Brazil. So just from size, and the biggest in the Spanish-speaking world, worldwide. So just in that sense, it's a very big market. So that's one, like, the first point of the second one would be, I think Mexico has a special situation being the main trading partner with the U.S., like the second biggest remittance market in the world. I just saw something that says Mexico is the country that brings the most money from tourism in the world, even big more than France and Spain. So I guess this, the fact that Mexico is kind of in the border between the first and the third world, makes it so that like global payments is a core part of Mexico's essence, you know? So I think in that sense, Bitcoin and Lightning and this type of technologies play a core role in Mexico. And so I think that position, and also Mexico being the first expat destination, I think all of, and I also think that Mexico has a very, I'm very bullish on Mexico. Many people are not these days. I think Mexico is due for a big economic boom. There's also changes to the stock market law that make it so that IPOing in Mexico starting next year is going to be like 100 times easier. So I just see many, many things in Mexico that make me bullish. Plus the fact that it's like global trade and like global payments is part of the essence of Mexico's economy. All and the fact that I live here and I enjoy living here, and I now know most of Bitcoin communities here. All and also I would say the fact that I think Mexico is a bit behind in terms of Bitcoin. It's way like it has been dominated by Bitso for so many years, and there was just like a crypto generalist vision for so many years. So all of that combined is the reason why I chose Mexico.
I agree. And I think it's really important to call out the demographics of Mexico. I mean, half the population is 30 or under. I think that's still pretty accurate. And so you have, as opposed to like the U.S., which is an aging population, you have an incredibly young, digital-oriented population. So it's, I think, the gravitation toward tools like Swapito, the understanding of Bitcoin from just an inherent nature of having of living with a currency that has had a lot of devaluation and changes in it that, you know, I think brings a natural understanding. So I'm really happy that you're here, because I think maybe one of the issues of slow Bitcoin adoption was just thinking that it was hard to transact with and or complicated. So this helps facilitate it for those who, you know, who don't have the ability to just put it away for 10 years, but they want to actually use it and transact with it.
Right. Well, I think that has been one of the biggest challenges. You know, it has been user experience. Some people sometimes forget that the education levels in Mexico and third world countries is behind first world countries. So you need way better user experience. You need way easier tools. You know, you need like, why is WhatsApp so use here, because it's so easy to use, you know? So I think it's important to improve in terms of user experience, which is what we're trying to do in terms of education. And also, I think there was a lack of vision, of message, at least in terms of Bitcoin only. People think crypto is just gambling. It's not. Bitcoin is savings technology. You know, it's the best way to store your wealth. That message is not that. It's not resonating that much so far in Mexico, you know. So there's a lot of place to bring it to new levels.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I think it's also, you know, kind of broadly speaking to technology, a sign of when a technology is maturing is also when you don't even necessarily know what's being used on, you know, in a transaction, or in this case, the receiver. You know, I could just be telling you, hey, Gustavo, you know, you owe me 1,000 pesos. Here's my clave, and you know, you may be sending me those 1,000 pesos through the Swapito service, and I might not even know what Bitcoin is, right? Of course, you as the sender have knowledge and know how to use this service, but yeah, I mean, you're just expanding. You're seeing the expansion of some of Bitcoin's use cases and seeing an off ramp, Bitcoin only, and a Bitcoin specific off ramp in Mexico is very exciting to see, Gustavo. So, I mean, we're definitely looking forward to Swapito's journey.
Thank you, Israel. Well, yeah, I totally agree with everything you said, you know. And I think it's really important to be Bitcoin only, but also to provide great user experience. You know, it's not enough to just be, to have a good vision and to have good ideals, but it's also important to deliver what users want. And what makes life easier to users.
So talk to us a little bit about your team. I know you're based in Mexico City. How are you distributed, or what? And also, since you're a growing company, we're always trying to encourage more people to get involved with Bitcoin businesses. So do you have any openings, or will you be hiring anytime soon? And what does your team dynamic look like?
Well, for now, I'm the only one that is full-time and like public about my involvement with Swapito. So, but I can, let's say, name my other teammates without naming them, you know, name their roles without naming them. So I have a CTO, who's handled all the development, all the engineering required to make Swapito a reality. I have a social media manager, someone that helps me out with tweets, that's very good at that, with events, with community. And I also have a web designer, / general designer that helps me with the design and branding. I handle the rest of the business, which is you know, strategy, business development, sales, product management, legal, accounting, and so much more, right? We don't have any open roles, and because we're self-funded, we don't have a lot of money. We're hoping that will change over the next couple of months. Us growing revenue, us maybe raising funds too. And but I guess something that I tell to people is that we're gonna have an affiliate program quite soon, and that's gonna be a way for people to recommend Swapito and make gain some sats, you know. So and people who helped us to do that in Montreal actually made a living out of this. So this can work out. It also shows that, you know, if you like Swapito and you recommend it to people, you would be the first one we'd consider to hire, you know. So it also helps in that regard. But yeah, we don't, like I said, we don't have any funds right now to be hiring people. Unfortunately, hope that changes sooner rather than later.
Monetization, do you get like a piece of every transaction, or how does that work?
Yes, that's exactly right. So right now we charge 2.79%. So if the fee, what the exchange rate is on CoinGecko or any like exchange rate API providers, we charge 2.79 on top of that. Some of that goes to us. Some of that goes to our providers. You know, some of that is just the spread of any financial market. So we make about 1.3% currently on every transaction. So yeah, it's a volume-based monetization strategy.
And then did I hear you correctly, Gustavo, that you mentioned you might be fundraising towards year or maybe early next year? Is that?
Well, that's what we hope. So, you know, I'm also of the philosophy that, you know, you have to go to market first, you have to gain users, make money before fundraising, at least in this type of business. Maybe in deep tech is different, you know, but so right now I'm operating self-funded, and I will be for the next couple months. But I think we will, in a couple months, we will have an attractive enough position so that we can fundraise early. My preference would be early next year, Q1 or Q2, right? Late Q1, early Q2, that would be where my ideal optimal case.
Okay. You know, as Israel and I have been talking with founders, we've noticed two things, well, a lot of things, but two points. One is that founders tend to raise less and raise less frequently because of the, I guess, the time preference of really proving and not just going for this growth at all cost mentality that I think became so popular in Silicon Valley, but to really have a solid business that's earning revenues first and then profitability before committing to fundraising, because you are giving up part of your company. And then the second thing is adopting a Bitcoin treasury. And you mentioned that you live on a Bitcoin standard. And so I'd love to hear your philosophy. I know it may not be applicable today since you're funding your operations, but how do you view Swapito adopting a Bitcoin treasury for the company?
Well, as an exchange, well, as a on and off ramp platform, there's a requirement to run the business to hold Bitcoin. You know, you have to have like float in both currencies, in let's say pesos and Bitcoin, because you want to be able to send payments fast and then settle at the end of the day, at the end of the week, within your many accounts. So, first of all, there's the requirement for us to have like a Bitcoin position at all. Right now, not, because not right now, but when we grow, yes. So that's the first part. The second part is, I'm a big believer in Bitcoin treasury. You know, it's always about what I think you need at least a 3-year scenario where you don't need that money within 3 years, even four, you know, because it has happened to me in the past that I went all in on Bitcoin at the top, and then I had to hold on for many years. So it's important to be cautious as well on that. But yeah, we're big believers in that.
I think it was Alex Leishman in another interview we had that 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 kind of made mention to his point of view speaking to this topic, that it was, I mean, it's almost kind of just a binary outcome, right? Bitcoin's either going to work or it's not. And of course, being a Bitcoin company in the space, you're betting on this technology and asset working. So it's kind of a no-brainer to, you know, to be also holding, you know, a hard currency that's the best store of value we know as part of your treasury strategy. So anyways, yeah, it's interesting to hear, you know, the thoughts around that. And of course, it varies depending on the stage and capital needs of each business. But yeah, absolutely makes sense, Gustavo.
Right, exactly. You know, the way I see it is we're going to try to make money to fund ourselves first. And then maybe in with the extra profit, we're going to put in Bitcoin. And when we fundraise, you know, we want to just, if we're going to fundraise, if that's required to move things way faster, you know, if we need to get licensing or marketing campaigns that can get us to the next level in a way faster time frame, well, that's what we use the fundraising capital for. Hopefully, we're just able to fund ourselves and make some profit and stack that in Bitcoin through our operation.
Well, I know we're getting close to the hour here. Lynn, any other, I guess, questions or...
One other question, which is really a little bit apart from Swapito, but one of our mutual friends, Gustavo, told me that I should talk to you about this and bring it up. But it's your prior work with Wasabi and some of the privacy technologies that enable you to kind of keep your Bitcoin identity a little bit more more private. So and then there's, in recent months, there's been a lot of regulation kind of against some of these services, including providers of services who may not necessarily even custodia the Bitcoin, but are pass-throughs. So would just love your take on where this space sits today and what the future might be, and if there are any best practices for those who consider privacy of their Bitcoin ownings a priority.
Right. Well, just to give a background, I started, you know, using privacy technologies like Wasabi back in when I was in with Verify. So we created a lot about education material. We did a lot of workshops and consulting to help people use that. Then at Bull Bitcoin, when I worked there, we were also big collaborators and users of Wasabi. And then I worked at Wasabi. It was just natural for me to go there after. At Wasabi, I was a technical writer, but also like a part of the marketing team. I helped with the social media as well. And then back, like you said, a couple of months ago, the Samurai founders were arrested. Then Wasabi shut down operations, most of its operations. I was laid off, as everyone in the team was. It worked out well for me because I was already thinking of doing Swapito, so it coincided, it matched out well. But basically, when that happened, Wasabi changed its model. It used to be a model where the wallet has always been open source, okay? But it was by default, there was a connection to a backend server that was run by ZK Snacks, which was Wasabi's like company, you know, the company behind Wasabi. So every user that used Wasabi Wallet, the software, was connected to a liquidity pool that was running run by servers under the Wasabi company. And that's how the Wasabi company was, ZK Snacks was making money. Every user that was coin joining was paying a little fee for the liquidity to ZK Snacks, and ZK Snacks was making money. Okay, well, when last couple months, this changed because now there's no default server anymore. Anybody can run a CoinJoin server because it's open source software, and anybody can can appear on the list of CoinJoin servers on the Wasabi interface. So when you run Wasabi now, you will be asked, which server do you want to use? And there's ones that charge no fees, that have a lot of liquidity, that are very trustworthy. So they're usually at the top of the list. You can do your own research. You can ask me. And you can use Wasabi today that way. You know, it's a bit of, as Wasabi was decentralized when it shut down. It didn't really shut down. It just became a decentralized project. So that's very useful. I know people that use it every day, and it's still very useful. So it's still working. And you know, I've never met anybody that has de-anonymized Wasabi, even though many say they can. It's just not true. So I still recommend people to use Wasabi. I still recommend people to use JoinMarket and Jam, which is an interface for JoinMarket, which is a peer-to-peer coin join service. So instead of it being an like a client-server architecture, it's rather a peer-to-peer architecture, a bit different, a bit slower, maybe less user-friendly than Wasabi, but still very practical and very useful. So Wasabi and JoinMarket. And what's next? Well, I think there's an interesting development with things like Joinster and another one called MSB. So MSB is developed by Super Testnet, who some might know is a Bitcoin developer. So what these new tools, what they do is that they use Nostr. Nostr is like a decentralized social media or communication network. They use Nostr to communicate, to coordinate the transaction. Instead of it being like on Wasabi, many clients and one server coordinating the transaction between them, Joinster and MSB are leveraging Nostr so that they can decentralize the server component of the architecture. So I think it's going there too. That's going to be part of the future too. So yeah, in the end, my position is that, you know, there's always more innovation happening. And there's always new tools out there. So there's always going to be privacy on Bitcoin. There has always been, well, there's been for many years, and there's always going to be. But it changes, you know. It's no longer viable to make a business out of it and to be like a regular registered company with a business model around it. It's more around decentralized tools, so people can collaborate freely.
That's all I have. I wanted to sneak that one in. But Gustavo, is there anything that we haven't asked you that you'd like to share with our audience? Or Israel, do you have any final questions?
No. Go ahead, Gustavo. Any last comments?
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I'm also part of the Bitcoin OpTech team. So Bitcoin OpTech is a weekly newsletter where we share Bitcoin technology news. I'm in charge of the notable code and documentation changes. So any important pull request that happens to Bitcoin Core, LND, C-Lightning, all the core Bitcoin protocol technologies, I write about them, you know, so I'm very much updated on every change. And I think that's a good fit with Swapito because it allows us to be at the forefront of Bitcoin development and Bitcoin technologies. And Bitcoin education as well. So yeah, I just wanted to add that. People want to know more about Bitcoin tech, they can read bitcoinops.org. It's a very good newsletter, one of the best out there. And yeah, well, just to say that as well, that we're very excited about Swapito. We're very invested in the Mexican community. You know, you can always find me in Mexico City at the meetups, at La Casa de Satoshi, which is I call it the Mexican headquarters of Bitcoin. But it's like a co-working space, Bitcoin co-working space in Mexico City. So yeah, I'm just very open to hearing from anybody, to collaborate with anybody in Mexico or elsewhere. So yeah, please feel free to reach out on Twitter or anywhere to me so we can collaborate.
Oh, well, thank you, Gustavo. And, you know, thanks for the time and going through what you're working at Swapito. It sounds like 2025 is going to be a very eventful year, I think, for the whole Bitcoin space, but for your company as well. So we look forward to staying in touch. And yeah, thanks again for coming on.
Well, thank you, Israel and Lynn, for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.